to people who may find themselves in my position, that there really is help and there really is hope after, you know, after all of the domestic abuse. My personal slogan is share the hope of escape from domestic violence, the hope that God gives us happier ever afters.
Do you need encouragement to turn tragedies into your own triumphant life story? If so, this podcast is for you. Listen to powerful guests who have persevered through challenges so you can gain strength to build your championship life. The host of Professor of Perseverance Podcast, Dr. James Perdue.
Hey, what are we doing there? Hey, look at this. We got both of them.
Oh, nice.
That's okay, then. We'll just do it this way. Hey, welcome, everybody. I'm Dave. Welcome to the Professor of Perseverance. I'm Dr. James Perdue, the Professor of Perseverance himself. Yep. Well, we're a little early. See, there's a guest over this way. No, this way. There's a guest already in view.
Hi.
Here. I usually try to hide them until I get the intro. But, hey, she's in here early. So, hey, let me go and give the intro. Donna Wells is a wife, mom, teacher, and a domestic abuse survivor. All right. So we're going to talk. That's our topic today, is talking about surviving domestic abuse. Her book chronicles her escape after years of abuse by a Christian husband. Don't let someone fool you just because they say they're Christians. Let them walk it, earn it, do everything they're supposed to. Anybody can carry the title. Anybody can carry the title. Make them show you they're qualified to be one. All right, now, but she was able to use this experience, this journey, her story, to learn that God still gives happier ever afters for those who want them, who deserves them. So, hey, we got already Nancy in the house here. Nancy, thank you for coming in. And she already, when we had to postpone, Donna.
Yes.
Nancy was, I gave a little preview what to expect. And Nancy said she really wants to be here because it's part of her story as well with some domestic abuse. So she wants to learn from you as well. And before we get going, let's mention Donna, her book. Donna Wells, it says, I'll Pray for You, a Christian woman's guide for surviving domestic violence. Donna, thank you for being here today and teaching us, educating us, learning us, inspiring us, encouraging us, motivating us. I guess that's enough.
Wow, thank you. That was a pretty impressive, intro. So like you said, I met him at a church picnic, you know. It goes to show that you just never know what's deep inside a person until you get to know them. And the culture that I was raised in was very conservative, and you know, there was that movement back in the, I hate to tell you how old I am, but, you know, back in the 90s and the early 2000s, where Christians were courting instead of dating. And so there was a lot of pressure to court and then marry the person. Mm-hmm. And so I, you know, looking back, we can always say, well, listen, I shouldn't have done that, but there's a lot of things that I learned. And, so my book is called I'll Pray for You, but do you mind if I read where that title comes from?
No, go ahead. This is your show.
Okay.
I'm just here to learn and get fired up and motivated, inspired and encouraged. So this is your show. We'll just follow along with you.
So the book is, the title is tongue in cheek or sarcastic. And I took it from an incident where after my husband, he tried to kill me, basically, but we'll get back to that part. But he told the arresting officers, the military police, when they arrested him because he was Navy, that if he found me, he would finish the job that he had started. And that they understood that to mean that he was going to kill me. And so I was living in hiding at the home of a friend, but her husband was going to come home from being out at sea on a Navy vessel. And it would have been really awkward for me to be there after her and her husband had been apart for several months, you know, so I needed to find someplace else to stay with my daughter, who was not a little more than a year and a half old. And so here's where the preface comes in. Bruised, desperate, and homeless, I stood on the back porch of the head deacon's house from my church. I expected him to welcome us with open arms. After all, he had helped us before. He and his wife had even hosted our baby shower. However, when I explained my situation, something was different this time. He didn't invite us inside. Instead, he shook his head, saying, "I'm sorry. I've done all I can. But I'll pray for you." I couldn't believe what I was hearing. With nowhere to go, I walked to my car, defeated, and drove away. I didn't know what to do. What do you do in that kind of a situation? These were my church friends that I had thought would help, and they couldn't.
Just to say, "I'll pray for you," I mean, that's a lot, because you can get a lot done in praying.
Oh, absolutely.
But I think there's more that you can do. I mean, even if they can't offer for you to stay at their place, they could have been making phone calls to arrange something else.
Well, and at that point, I was homeless. I wasn't allowed to go back to my apartment because the military police said that they were, and thank you, Dina, by the way, in the comments. But basically, the military police said it wasn't safe. They weren't allowed to take his keys. He was stalking me. He was harassing me. I could have used a box of diapers for my baby, or a cup of tea, or a hug, or, you know, just anything at that point. When my ex-husband tried to kill me, I left the house in an ambulance with the contents of my baby's diaper bag, which was like a change of clothes for me and a couple of changes of clothes for her. But that's all I had. I wasn't allowed to go back to my house without three military policemen coming with me. And so it was difficult. I was looking for just the basics of life. So that's where the name of the book comes from, "I'll Pray for You." And, you know, the challenge is then to put, and, you know, and sometimes we say, "Oh, thoughts and prayers." Well, you know what? I'm much more careful now when I say thoughts and prayers that I actually pray for that person, but I also try to do something for that person too, right? Is there something I can do for you? Is a call I can make? Or is there, you know, so those kinds of things.
There seems to be, we can go one step further. I mean, not to say praying's the easiest, but like you said, everybody can say, "I'll pray for you."
Right.
It's to me, the compassion would be offering up something to make life easier. I mean, to help get away from where you're at.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, if nothing else, fix you a ham sandwich as you're going out the door, you know, or a glass of milk, you know, for your baby as you're going out the door. You know, the Bible does say feed those and you know, and clothe those. And so, yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, I learned a lot through this experience. So I grew up in a Christian home. My parents, I like to say my parents took me to church even before I remember being there, you know, growing up in church. And I went on a summer mission trip to Hawaii. And, you know, I thought that I was doing all the do's and don'ting all the don'ts, you know, that we make our list sometimes of, you know, we think that God wants our do's and our don'ts. And I even, like I said before, I met him at a church picnic and he said all the right things, but it wasn't right. And the longer I was married to him, the more mentally and physically and even sexually abusive he became. And I spent a lot of years dissecting myself, right? Because we hear all these things about, as a teacher, the growth mindset. And in church, we hear about how you should be a better person. What was wrong with me that I had, you know, I could teach children in Sunday school. I was a teacher. I would teach classrooms full of children. The kids liked what I was doing. And we did this NASA space science where the kids got to be mission controllers and space station astronauts. And then halfway through, we switched crews and the kids did such a great job and all of their test scores went up and they were excited about coming to school. It was a great program. So here I am excelling in my professional life and all these things, but how come I couldn't talk to my husband? You know, what was wrong with me?
And during that time, I mean, it's emotionally and physically or whatnot that you've been beaten down.
Absolutely.
You've had to be so strong in front of your kids, these children, your students, and plus your professional colleagues, so they don't suspect anything.
They absolutely didn't know. And even to this day, I've sent a couple of them a copy of my book, and they're just dumbfounded that it even, that they didn't know. And, you know, for a while, I blamed myself so much. And I, you know, we think about, oh, it must be me. And I think I was raised that way. You know, there are still places in the U.S. where, you know, you raise the little girl to be the wife and mom and the whole thing. And I think that growing up in the 70s and 80s, now, again, I'm dating myself and, you know, no one's that old, actually. But the idea is that there was that viewpoint of the woman or the female child being a teacher or a secretary or these other things, but being taught to serve. And so I spent years and years until my friend, whose husband was in the Navy, said, you know, maybe you need to go to the Navy Counseling Center. They were actually really good. They helped me, and maybe they can help you too. And, you know, I went to the Navy Family Service Center, and after the first or second counseling session, the counselor looked me in the eye and said, you know, have you ever considered it might not be you? And I really had never considered that it might not be me, because my abuser kept saying, of course it's you, you know, and no one will listen to you and you're, you know, all these things. And it turns out it wasn't me.
Well, they've got to beat you down again, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, for you to believe all that, so they don't convince themselves that they're the problems. And so let's go back to when you're talking about dating, picnicking, meeting them for the first time and everything like that. Now, we all know that 2020 hindsight, you know, is always hindsight's always 2020. Here we go.
Yes,
it's always the best. During your dating time, or you call courting time. Mm-hmm. All right. Did he ever step out of bounds on, you know, physically and mentally abusive, that you sit back and go, man, that was a warning. I should have looked at that. I should have took that more serious.
There are a couple of times that I remember. So this one time when we were dating, a friend of mine, now we were in Hawaii and I was teaching at the Christian school there, a private school. And a friend of mine from college was flying through. He was on his way, I don't know, I want to say Asia or something, you know, Japan or something, flying through Hawaii. And the idea is that I was going to go to lunch with him. And he was a college friend because, you know, at the Christian college I went to, we always had to sit in alphabetical order. And so my last name started with S at that point, and his last name started with S. And we sat together in like every class. And so we got to be friends. And he asked me to lunch because he had a couple hour layover in Hawaii. And you would have thought that my ex-husband, Dirk, is what I call him in the book. You would have thought that I was like marrying someone else. He called me and cried, and he called again and again and again. And finally I said, look, I'm just having lunch and I will get back to you. You know, I will meet you at our friend's house when lunch is over. Please, you know, this is really just, you know, it's an hour and a half for lunch, you know, just please. And, he was so upset. And so when I got back to my friend's house, my friend's mom said, you know, Donna, what did you do? And I said, I went to lunch. And she's like, he has been beside himself this whole time. You need to apologize. And I was like, okay, why? You know, like confused. Why do I need to apologize? And she said, well, you know, you hurt his feelings and the Bible says we need to be kind. And so I'm sorry that you're upset. And I didn't think anything more of it. But, you know, later on, he absolutely remembered that. And there were things that he would, you know, I know you're going to ditch me and you're cheating on me just like you did, you know, with that lunch. And I'm like, no, it was lunch with a friend from Bible college. It wasn't, you know, so there was that. And then there was another, right after we got married, we went to visit his family, from the deep South, and I'm from upstate New York. So that, you know, big, big differences there.
And I'm in South Tennessee.
Woohoo. I live
Rocky
in South
Top. Rocky Top.
Ooh, pretty nice. So we went to visit his family and we were watching a movie. It was right around Christmas time. So we were watching, you know, the normal Christmas movies. And I got up to get a drink of water. And of course, you know, it's polite to ask if anyone else wants a drink. And I'm getting up. Would you like anything? And no one did. And so when I started to walk, he kicked my feet out from under me. And of course, I shrieked because why would you do that? And then I landed on the concrete floor that was just covered with a thin layer of carpet. And I started to cry because that really hurt a lot. And he's laughing at me. Like, and I'm just kind of crying and looking at him like, why are you laughing at me? And he said, well, I'm laughing. You should have seen your face. And I said, but you hurt me. But your face was funny. No, but you hurt me. And so he tried to pull me on his lap and he never really apologized. And I've learned that that's a big red flag for abusers. They expect you to just forgive them because you were supposed to know they were joking. The bruise I had on my tailbone from that was not a joke.
Yeah. And Nancy put here, you know, they want to get to that, lower their self-esteem. And that way they can take, you know, take control of you. And then then it makes you, you know, again, feel like you're the problem. and it's not them.
Absolutely.
Now, you've went through your courting. You did notice a couple of red flags, but you were still courting and we're in love. And love makes us do dumb things sometimes. And so how long when marriage become when y'all become marriage did you really go, wow, this is a mistake? I mean,
you know,
I'm assuming you had small stuff that you again recognize when you look back.
Absolutely. There is a lot of stuff.
But there had to been something huge. And absolutely. You're going, man, God allowed me to fall in love with this. I mean, right. Not to blame God, but right. You know, sometimes we do blame God.
No, and honestly, I struggle with that, you know, and who wouldn't, honestly, having been through what I went through. But just to give you an idea, so Dirk came home from being out at sea he was on a submarine and he had been out to sea for 6 months and he had changed. He was paranoid and he was forceful and just mean. And they said he had been sick and he had lost like 20 or 30 pounds, but you know, you never want to think about the person that loves you or the person that you love as someone who's going to hurt you. You just don't consider that. There were a couple of times when I made him food that he didn't like. And, I answered my phone without his permission. I wasn't allowed to answer the door or answer the phone or, you know, go anywhere that he didn't know. And I answered the phone without his permission and he grabbed my phone and slammed it against the wall and it broke in a million pieces. And there was another time that I don't even remember what I did. He was telling me part of that verbal abuse, right? He was telling me that maybe he should move to Southeast Asia and change his name and I'd be by myself and I'd have to raise our baby by myself. And I made the mistake of standing up for myself and saying something to the effect of, well, you're gone 9 months out of the year anyway. I don't know what it would make any difference. Oh, mm-hmm. It was awful. So he ordered me to go to the bedroom and to keep it PG. He raped me and he left me there, to be dismissed what seemed like a long time later. And I don't know how long it was because I, you know, was traumatized.
Yes.
You know, so then I knew that this wasn't healthy and I was continuing to see the Navy counselor and the Navy counselor explained to me that this was not normal, that what I was experiencing was horrific and that I needed a safety plan. And at her insistence, I made a safety plan, but you know, no one ever needs those things, right?
Oh yes.
No one ever needs those things. And we made a joke of it. You know, there's this guy named Justin, just in case. And, you know, and we need every now and then to plan for that, for his arrival, just in case. And so we made this safety plan and I never thought I would have to use it, but I did.
And you mentioned earlier about how you were brought up that going to be a wife, a mom, do all the cleaning, do all the cooking. And like you said, that's probably rarity in today's time that a woman's brought up like that. But you're brought up to obey and all that, like, you know, from there. And yeah. So here you're, I'm assuming with love and then obeying the command that, you know, to your, that you feel like you're still trying to follow what God, you know, has placed over in, over you, through you, conviction.
Absolutely. You know, because I, it just, there had been so many things that, you know, just so beaten down that it's obviously my fault. I mean, it wasn't really, but I had
that's your mentality thinking. That's your mentality. That's what he had driven you to believe. Yes.
Right. So it was all my fault. And, you know, after the divorce, my friend and I used to laugh that global warming was my fault, you know, just to kind of help break some of that, some of those, that thought brainwashing. Let's see, the global ice caps are melting, so that's obviously my fault. He was arrested, that was definitely my fault, you know, and global warming, definitely my fault, you know, trying to unbrainwash myself, and if that's even a word, but, you know, trying to make sense of those, of those feelings. And so it was trying to make sense of it all was very difficult.
Yeah, people like that, they, like you said a while ago, when he tripped you, kicked your feet up underneath you, you got hurt, didn't apologize for it, they're not going to admit that they made mistakes and stuff. Again, it's always, I did it because you didn't clean the house. I did it because you didn't fix my favorite meal, like you said a while ago, somebody didn't like. And it's always an excuse and a blame on others. They don't take responsibility for their actions.
That's true. And even, you know, the day that of the final assault, the day of the final assault, he still didn't take responsibility for his own actions. I made him hurt me.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
So we talked a little bit about my safety plan, and my safety plan was to phone a friend and, you know, and meet her and get somewhere safe when he started pacing. Well, he had started pacing, and the Navy had removed him from our house twice before because of his temper and just mental health issues is what they said, because, you know, with HIPAA, you're not allowed to know all the things. So mental health issues, and they had removed him a couple times before. And so I was in the middle of calling my friend from the kitchen, and I had turned my back on him when he grabbed me by the back of the neck and my left arm and picked me up from the ground, because he was 6'4 and over 200 pounds, and slammed my body repeatedly into the storm door of our second floor apartment. And with the, you know, he's yelling, "I'm not leaving, you are," as he's slamming me into the door. And after the second time, my arm, I was able to get my arm through the screen, the door, the glass on the top and the screen on the bottom. And I was able to get my hand through the screen and open the door. And when I opened the door, he threw me down the concrete stairs. And I remember not touching any one of those stairs all the way down.
Wow.
And I remember hitting the bottom with both feet going, "Thank you, God, I got down here on my feet," because I don't remember hitting any of the things in between. And he, I remember running to the trash enclosure in our little apartment complex. It was Navy housing. So I remember hiding in the trash enclosure and listening to him yell and scream and tell me that he deserved everything and I wasn't getting anything. He was taking my car and everything. And I wasn't, you know, I wasn't worth anything. And the only thing I could think of is that at that point was my little girl up in her room, who was supposed to be taking a nap. And Lord knows, I don't know how she slept through all of that. But I said, well, what if I need to take her to the doctor? And he stopped and he tossed my keys in the woods. And he went back up to the apartment and I heard him rumble, you know, crashing things everywhere, but I didn't dare get out of that trash enclosure. And then I quickly peeked through the, you know, through the little tiny gaps in the fence to watch him storm off, you know, start up his truck and skid off as he drove away. And all of that time, again, I don't know how I did it, but I was holding my phone up to my ear, my cell, and listening to my friend Rhonda say, help is on the way. I called the military police. I called the ambulance. They're going to be there shortly to help you. And so I went up the stairs and I checked on my daughter who was still sleeping. And I remember sitting on the couch, just falling in a heap, just so upset that anything like that could ever happen to me. Like, how could my life have gotten this bad? My apartment was a crime scene. I had a cut over my eye. I ended up with a black eye. I had the perfect imprint of his hand on my left arm and a perfect imprint of his hand on the back of my neck. And the military police took pictures repeatedly of that. And across my thighs, he had hit me so hard against the storm door that, you know, that little metal lip across the storm door.
Oh, yes, 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 yes.
I had that perfect outline across my chest and across my legs where he had hit me with such force. And I just, my whole life was shattered. I didn't know what I was going to do.
And how long have you been married up to this point?
It was 12 years that we had been married.
12 years.
But I like to say that he was out because sometimes we blame the victim, right? Why did you stay so long? What did, you know, why?
But yes, that's a good point. A lot of people would go, I would get out of there. But then I've told other people, when you're so beaten down mentally, physically, spiritually, emotionally, everything,
right?
You don't know what you would do.
You don't. And there's this, you know, that old saying, the devil you know, right? I didn't have a job at that point. My teaching certificate had lapsed because I was staying home with our daughter. I was in Washington State, not anywhere near South Carolina where I went to school or, you know, where my family is. And that was, you know, how was I going to get there? I didn't have any money because he controlled all the money, you know, so you don't know. And so it was really difficult to leave. But, you know, I decided that when I was in the emergency room and the detectives, I met some really nice NCIS detectives, you know, not the ones from TV, but I, you know, kind of bringing that into reality. Those detectives, when they interviewed my now ex-husband, they were convinced that he was going to try to kill me again and that he would stalk or hurt whoever he needed to get to me. And so, I believed them, right? I had no reason to not believe them, but, you know, they even suggested that I stay with a friend and not get an apartment in my own name or a hotel room or any of that because he would come find me. In fact, I ended up staying in hiding at the home of my friend, and I call her Alice in the book.
I was getting ready to ask you if you went into hiding. I was getting ready to ask that.
Yep, I absolutely did. I had to carry my phone with me at all times. When I left the house where I was staying, I had to call my friend and tell her where I was going. And then I had to tell her when I arrived and when I expected to leave. And then when I left, I had to tell her when I was leaving and when I would be expected back, because it was, I was in grave danger. Mm-hmm. It was awful. I couldn't even go. And I had two little cats at the time. And I could not even go feed my cats without three military police officers, because domestic abuse is so difficult, such a bad situation, that sometimes the husband and wife will gang up on the on the police officers. And so they explained that if I wanted to go feed my cats or get more clothing, that I would have to call their office, and they would assign me a certain time, and they would have three officers come and meet me. And when they met me, they took my house keys. They went through every cabinet, every closet, every drawer. They patted all the cushions down in the couch to make sure that he didn't leave anything, any kind of booby trap there to hurt me.
Yes. Do they think that with him being in the Navy sparked so much stress to cause the abuse for whatever he had to do? Or was he, hate to use the term, raised and born and raised into that situation throughout his life? And that's all, and he just, that's all he knew.
I would say a little bit of both. The Navy sent him to anger management school, which ended up being a, you know, I did that to him, right? I made him angry. Yes. I should be going to anger management school.
Oh, yes.
You know, he took a swing at his commanding, not commanding officer, but his immediate supervisor. But that was my fault. And I'm thinking, how is that my fault? I wasn't at work with, you know, I didn't do that. You know, so between the fact that he was born and raised that way and the stressors of the military, I think that, you know, he just was not in a good place.
It's one of the things called the perfect storm, all boiling together, and finally snapping again, taking no responsibility for anything. So,
right. Absolutely.
Now let's get into the good stuff. You know, part of the title, part of your intro was that you found that God still gives you happy ever afters. And
yes.
So let's get into how God continued working into you to build you back up, to give you the life that you deserve.
So basically, I moved to South Carolina, outside of Charleston, where my brother and my family is. So I moved there. I lived in a little trailer with my daughter, and we basically rebuilt our lives there. You know, I got a job teaching, and I was able to get renew my teacher certificate. I remember one day my daughter was about 2.5, and I thought, you know, I might be able to live under a rock for the rest of my life, but that's not fair for my little girl. And so we started small with a mommy and me little gym, you know, class on Saturday mornings, just getting out and, feeling like the world might be a safe place after all, you know, because he was still stationed in Washington State and I'm on the other coast, so I might be okay now. You know, but starting small. And then there was another day that I share in my book, but I vividly remember standing in my kitchen going, what do I want for dinner? Because my daughter was 2. She was happy with chicken nuggets and rice and green beans, because, you know,
hey, that's me still.
You know, absolutely. And I'm like, well, what do I want for dinner? Hey, I could fry up a burger or some chicken, and I could put some onions in there, and, you know, that southern squash casserole. Ooh, yeah.
Oh, yes. Amazing. Oh, yes. I can go for that.
And my ex-husband hated all those things. He hated onions and the smell of garlic and squash casserole. Oh, no, I was never allowed to have that in my house. Uh-huh. And I remember thinking, I can have whatever I want for dinner. I can have squash and I can cook onions and peppers and I could even make, you know, like okra and all the good Southern dishes and things.
Yes, yes, yes.
And
I'm thinking, at that point when you're doing that, is that like maybe a first time that you're thinking opening freedom, you know, freedom now, because now I can do what I want to do and not worry about offending him or being attacked for it. So now your brain is finally getting nourished and thinking freedom.
Absolutely. And it went on with, wow, what is my favorite color? What do I like to do? It's been so long since I've had time to do something for myself. I can read a book. I can, you know, all these things. It was all just brand new to me. It was amazing. And, you know, some of the old habits stayed. They're, you know, I'm not going to lie and say, oh, no, everything is just dandy. I wish. But
it takes more than one turn of the page to get through the book. And so just like it's going to take more than one day, you know, like you said, to get through some stuff still, I'm sure at this point, sometimes it still sneaks into your mind and you've got to stop it and think of something positive.
Absolutely. A couple of things when you said that. So I actually learned to play a silly video game because my ex-husband would play it all the time. And I couldn't imagine why he would sit at his computer for like 8-10 hours. What is wrong with you? So I figured that, you know, I would build a bridge and start playing this game with him. Well, he went out to sea and I got better at the game than he did. And that became spot, of course. Mm-hmm. You know, talking with the counselors and the domestic violence advocates, you know, they said, you know, there's nothing wrong with playing video games as long as you understand that this isn't real life and you can't, you know, just play video games. You need to take care of your child and, you know, work a job and all these things.
Mm-hmm.
But so there was one day that I was playing this silly video game and this man, basically, his character walked up to my character in the game and he whispered to me, you know, you could play your character better if you did this, 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 or this. And I was offended by that.
Mm-hmm.
You don't just whisper somebody that you don't know and you inspected my armor. What? You're not, you know, how rude was kind of the comment.
Uh-huh.
And, about a week later, a friend of mine introduced me to that same guy, and we had the most fun talking about the bad dates, because somehow after you've been divorced, people think that you need to jump right into something else, and I was not ready for that. Mm-hmm. But we laughed about some of the people that I had been set up with. And there was one man who said he was a firefighter, but when I brushed a rock off my foot, because, you know, flip-flops in the South in the summer, he was like, oh, no, I'm a germaphobe. And that was the end of the date. And I was like,
I thought you were going to say, hey, I'm a firefighter, but I start the fires first.
No, he wouldn't have anything to do with me anymore because I touched my foot. Wow. And then there was another man who said, oh, well, we went out to dinner and I paid for your dinner. So now you have to sleep with me.
Okay.
No, that's not how this works.
Yeah, I didn't read that one in the Ten Commandments.
Yeah, no, that's not in there. And then, you know, and the other guy who texted me from the bathroom telling me that he was having a lovely time. And I'm going, yeah. No, that's just weird. And then he kept texting me. I lived like 15, 20 minutes from the restaurant. And by the time I got home, he had probably texted me 7 or 8 times. And I just sent him one final text with, please don't call me anymore.
Yes, yes.
Please lose my number.
Man, and so, you know, those sayings that say it takes all kinds to make the world go around. I think we can lose a few of those kinds.
We could lose a few.
I'm sorry about that, but I mean, I know everybody's got their own way of doing things, but
absolutely,
there's some things we can do without.
Absolutely. So when I was reintroduced to the man that is now my husband, he actually apologized for all of those dates and told me about this girl who he went out with recently, who said that global warming was ruining her tan.
There you go.
And
of course, did you tell him that was your fault, according to your ex-husband?
Yes, yes. So we had some good laughs, and the other girl
now this is the same guy that was playing a game.
Yes,
that whispered to you.
Yes,
that friend introduced you to him.
Right.
Okay. Exactly. Okay. Same guy. All right.
Yep. The same guy. And so we spent so much time laughing, and you know that you just get these belly laughs where you get tears in your eyes. We mm-hmm. laughed so hard, and he said, you know, I need to come and take you out and have a respectable date for the, you know, to save the reputation of the male species.
There you go. That's right.
Like, I cannot possibly, we have to. And I said, you know, I've heard all this before. You'll never do it. Cause he was up here in Connecticut working, and mm-hmm. but he was traveling. And so he said, I have flight miles and hotel points. What's it going to take to convince you? And I said, well, an airline ticket, you know, an airline ticket reservation and a hotel, because you're not staying with me. I don't know you. And he said, give me 30 minutes. And do you know, not 20 minutes later, in my email box was a flight itinerary and a hotel reservation for him to come and take me out.
Wow, it's amazing.
And we had the best time. He came to Charleston for the weekend, and we went to church together. We toured Charleston. I don't think I had laughed that much in a very long time. But, you know, we dated for almost 4 years before we got married. And he asked my daughter's permission.
It was it's awesome.
He asked not only my parents, but my daughter, if he could marry me. And do you know, the little stinker said no. She said no.
Still looking after her mama.
Absolutely. She said no, because then I will have to share you with my mama.
There you go.
And he said, but sweetie, if I marry your mom, then I'll get to live with you all the time. And she's like, oh, okay then. You know, so then it was all good. And she was
we can all share.
So. Absolutely. And so to this day, she calls it our family anniversary. That was the day that we got married. So it's amazing.
That's the way it should be, is that the child needs to be involved. Not to say they had the final say so. It's still mom and dad are got to be the happy ones and involved. But it's still nice to get them involved and let them, instead of just being a surprise. Oh, look, we're married now, or we're engaged, going to get married, and springing it. I think that's pretty good for him to do that. I think he's done us men a little justice.
That was his intent. Absolutely, that was his intent.
Well, I think he did a good job. So
that was neat, you know, and occasionally he still travels for work. And my daughter, and I call her Allie in the book. I changed everybody's names except mine to protect, you know, everybody's privacy and, you know, the innocent and the guilty. And so at the end of the book, you know, there's still some struggles. But Allie and I were sitting on the beach in Spain, which is the opposite coast, the opposite side of the Atlantic Ocean, you know, and kind of tossing rocks in the water and the different things, and thinking about what an amazing transformation that we have had you know, she's now 16 and learning to drive and a junior in high school. And, you know, and I've published a book and I'm working on a second one, and I'm writing part of a college textbook that's hopes to come out next year on technology education. So just the amazing turnaround that our lives have, taken has been just wonderful.
Even though the, we'll go ahead and say the hell you went through with the first marriage, if you go back and look at the book of Job, everything goes through and you're faithful through all that. Look what all he acquired afterwards. And so, you know, look what God allowed trials and tribulations to go through, and then how much you have been blessed afterwards.
Absolutely. You know, and there are still scars. So about, back in the fall, the gardening thing, right? So we had these tomatoes and we were going to make our own tomato sauce. And I wasn't paying attention to where my husband was. And he came up behind me and smacked the wooden spoon on the sink drain board. And it scared me. And I panicked for a minute. I ran off to the bathroom and I could tell that he was upset. You know, I just lost it. It was just a moment of panic.
Well, it's also, you know, you may use panic, but I want to use the words survival instinct kicking in.
Absolutely.
If you don't mind, give us a powerful statement for anybody that's struggling that you can help them get through today. And so here's Donna's book up again. It says, I'll Pray for You, A Christian Woman's Guide for Surviving Domestic Violence. And I want to thank you for God leading you on to write this book and his guide to help other women that are going through similar situations.
Absolutely. So, I would say to people who may find themselves in my position, that there really is help and there really is hope after, you know, after all of the domestic abuse. My personal slogan is share the hope of escape from domestic violence, the hope that God gives us happier ever afters.
Yes. And again, remain faithful. I know sometimes for me, it's hard. But remain faithful and, you know, keep hanging in there. We use the word perseverance in part of my title. And absolutely. Persevere and good things will come for those. And blessings will just shower us. We just got to get through. You know, what's the old thing? You can't have a rainbow without the storm. True. You know, without the rain. And you know, I like to look at, you know, people say you can see the light at the end of the tunnel. Well, I like to add on seeing the light at the end of the tunnel and knowing it's not a freight train coming.
Yes.
So, yeah. So from there. So I want to thank Dina, Nancy, Natalie, Jay, my man Jay came in. Thank you, buddy, for coming in today. And again, Donna, thank you for coming and sharing your great story. I mean, just again, for your survival and still how positive you are. And again, we're going to help somebody here in the future as other people get on the replay. Anybody else, again, if you come in for the replay late, please share this out to help someone that you know that can use some hope, some positive message. Oh, I'm Dr. James Perdue, the Professor of Perseverance. Donna's getting ready to leave here in just a second. Do something today, tomorrow, something next week that's going to help you persevere past your paralysis.
Thanks for listening to the Professor of Perseverance podcast for motivation, inspiration, and encouragement. For more information, go to Facebook at Professor of Perseverance. Visit the website at professorofperseverance.com and view the YouTube channel, Dr. James Perdue, Professor of Perseverance.